You're listening to Wordslinger Podcast, episode 117, Going Social with Francis Caballo. This episode of the Wordslinger Podcast is brought to you by Draft to Digital. Convert your manuscript, distribute it online, and get support the whole way at drafttodigital.com.
It's the Wordslinger Podcast, where story matters. Build your brand, write your book, redefine who you are. It's all about the story here. What's yours? Now, here's the guy who invented pants optional, Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger.
Word Slinger.
Hey, everybody. This is Kevin Tomlinson, the Word Slinger. I'm having a pretty good week, and it just got better because you just showed up. Is that like the cheesiest radio line ever? But it's so true. I am so excited. Every time I get a chance to sit down and talk to you guys, I just enjoy it that much. But here's the deal. This week, Draft to Digital announced a partnership with Findaway Voices. Actually, the company is Findaway. Voices is their audiobook program. And here's what's going on, man. I have been billing this all over as an ACX competitor, basically. I mean, it's an ACX alternative. I don't really like the whole competitor atmosphere. So we're going to call this an alternative because ACX still serves a pretty good purpose. It still has some features that we're not offering just yet, like the 50-50 split. But the cool thing about Voices, and this is why it attracted us. First of all, Findaway is a company very much like Draft to Digital in the way it handles customer support. If you have a problem, you call, you talk to them directly. They don't try to nickel and dime the authors on things. They try to create things that are specifically geared towards assisting the author. So we felt a kinship with them. I flew up to Oklahoma City last week. I think it was last week. It seems like a year ago now. Last week, we met with those guys for a day. We hung out, had dinner, had drinks. They are our people. They are our tribe, man. So they have the interest of the author in mind with what they're doing. And here's the deal. You can now do audiobooks, get them into everywhere audiobooks are sold. These guys have 170-plus markets. The plus means they're growing, and that includes Audible and iTunes. iTunes no longer has its exclusivity deal with Audible, so they can take audiobooks from anyone, really. And so, you know, now we're in a whole new landscape where you can actually, as an independent author, you can actually produce your audiobook and get it distributed in much the same way you could, through Draft to Digital or anyone else. And get into all these new markets, and that's huge. That is huge. So, and the deal is, because it's not exclusive, you can still have your books on Audible, and the royalty is much better. You can get an 80% cut of Findaway's royalty, and that's based on the various vendors. Now, if you go to our website, actually, I have a blog post about this. Go, and here's the easiest way to do it, and I'll try to put this in the show notes too, but go to bit.ly/findawayd2d. That's the URL I put together for the blog post, and I'm continuously updating that post at Draft to Digital so that whenever you go and check, there'll be up-to-date information. And I've already added quite a bit, including a whole like FAQ that has everything you need to know about it. So that's the big announcement on the Draft to Digital side. And as a sponsor of the Wordslinger Podcast, they get some billing in here. Now, that's very cool. Things that are going on in the Wordslinger universe. We finally have, my wife, Kara, and I, we have finally made quite a bit of headway, actually, on unpacking. So we've moved in April, and we've been traveling. We keep getting shipped all over the planet, the two of us in separate directions, by the way. So we've had some things that have been sitting around. There's still a couple of boxes here and there. I have like three boxes of books, my books, some of which I am donating. I'm going to donate some to a public library back home, back where I grew up. Not in my not my public library, unfortunately, but fortunately, it is being run by, or a, one of my good friends is a librarian there now, and so I'm going to donate a box of books to those guys. And I've got two more boxes of books. These are things that, you know, I order some whenever I'm going to do a signing or whatever. And I'll just have one or two left over, and they kind of accumulate after a while. So what I'm going to do is there's a, I don't know, I can't remember the name of the organization, but there's kind of a youth club. Not club, that's the wrong word. It's they're set up to help teenagers, high school kids primarily, who are more or less homeless, really. They're having to stay in this sort of dormitory that these people have pulled together. And while they're there, they, you know, they're engaged in, you know, like activities, and, you know, they get a kind of social experience out of it, but they also, it's, they get the benefit of being helped by some amazing people. So I was going to volunteer with them anyway, and I sort of pitched the idea, like, I have a ton of my books that you know, are kind of just taking up space. What if I brought them and started handing them out to people? You know, we can create a little library, and I'll bring other books too. Let's just start adding to a library of books. So they didn't have to all be me. So that's going to be cool. I think that's a good way, you know, to hand off some excess and maybe help somebody out. other things, I mean, other than getting the house straight, I mean, we've been traveling. I just got back from Oklahoma City, like I mentioned earlier. My wife had flown to San Antonio. I think she may have gotten the better end of that deal as far as accommodations, because she stayed. I think it was a Drury Inn. It's on the Riverwalk, though. That is amazing. She kept sending me photos, but meanwhile, she'd send me like the view from her hotel room window, and there's like the Riverwalk with, you know, people strolling and musicians and that sort of thing. She'd take pictures of herself on the Riverwalk, and meanwhile, I have a view out of my hotel of a defunct strip joint next to a McDonald's. So anyway, whatever. It was good being in Oklahoma, hanging out with the Drafted Digital folks and hanging out with the Findaway folks, and we really got some cool stuff ironed out, which is really, it's all very exciting. I love being a part of this. So that's pretty much it on the news front. The RV is in there's some repairs being made. When I was driving back from the Smarter Artist Summit in April, there was some damage to the storage bay door. It's actually kind of an ongoing thing, but I'm finally getting all of it fixed. It's taking a while. I've got to get in touch with those guys. Actually, I got to call those guys right after I get off the phone with you guys. so anyway, that's it. That's all the announcements for this week, news-wise. You can hang out after the interview, and I'll do some housekeeping and wrap up. But for now, I got a really great interview set up. I talked with, now see, this is Frances Caballo is someone I met in San Francisco. Actually, I didn't meet her. We never actually got to meet there. We kind of emailed back and forth, and somehow, some way, we missed each other at the actual conference. So it was really good to sit down with her and have a chat about social media for writers. In part, that's part of our conversation. And if you happen to follow me on social media, you know I'm pretty active. I may not be doing everything quite right, and I don't hit every channel either, but I do subscribe to the philosophy. I think Francis actually talks about this, but the philosophy of go where your message is most likely to be heard by the people that most need to hear it. So, you know, I tend to linger on Facebook and Twitter. I still have a presence on LinkedIn for some reason. But I've never been big on like Instagram or, you know, any of the others. I don't even know half of them anymore. But does that make me sound old? Man, I suddenly felt like, you know, the old man. Maybe I am. All right. So anyway, some great tips in this interview. I'm really happy to present to you Frances Caballo. Listen in and stick around after for some quick housekeeping and a pleasant goodbye. And I'll see you on the other side. Hey everybody, thanks for tuning in, and today I'm talking with somebody who, she interviewed me actually at one point, and she's a wonderful person, and I just had to get her on the show, and that is Frances, and I'm going to butcher it, I'm sorry, it's Frances Caballo. Did I get it right?
You absolutely did.
All right. What's the, just a side note, what's the sort of origin of that last name?
Oh, all my grandparents were from Spain, and Caballo means horse in Spanish.
Oh, okay. All right, that's cool. I don't think my name means anything. Possibly jackass in Spanish. I'm not sure.
No, it doesn't.
So Frances she's a social media manager for writers. And she's got her own program that she interviewed me for, which I appreciate. Frances, thank you.
You're welcome.
And thank you for being on the show.
Well, thank you for the invitation. I really appreciate it.
No, and we were both at the San Francisco Writers Conference and missed each other every time we looked. Which I still find odd, but whatever.
I know. And I did look.
Yeah, I looked around. It was interesting because it's a compact sort of environment, but it was kind of crowded. So it was, and I was constantly being pulled off and talking to people. So I'm sure you were too.
Yeah, it was a sold out event, and they actually packed in more people than they normally do.
Really?
In a typical year. Yeah. But so, I had proof that I looked for you because I
you
picked
had the
up
button.
That button.
That's true. Yeah, that's true. You're the one who picked up a button. So those giant draft-to-digital buttons that I can never get anybody to take home with them.
And I do have a picture of you wearing that button.
Oh, really?
I'll have to send it to you.
Okay. Yeah, definitely do. Yeah, I don't. Was it like somebody just randomly took a shot or what?
Yeah, the conference photographer took a shot of you wearing the button at your exhibitor table talking with someone.
Oh, okay. Oh, see, proof that I was at the table. There we go.
Yeah.
I like it. The button is the proof.
<That's>
So
<right. laughs>
I want to talk a little about you've got a broad range of things we can talk about, actually, because you are yourself an author, right?
Right.
Are you traditionally published or indie published?
Indie published.
That's the only way to go.
I think so.
Yeah. But what made you choose indie over a traditional path?
Well, the reason is because I write about social media, and social media changes quickly.
Right.
And if I were to write a book and send it to a trade publisher, then it would be a year, and all the information would be outdated.
Oh, that's interesting. That's actually a really interesting point.
Yeah. So there was, because I remember with my first book, I was able to catch all the changes from LinkedIn that LinkedIn was making and other platforms were making, right? And I kept delaying publication because there are all these changes coming down the pike, right. And I was able to capture all of them.
Right. Well, that's and social media, of course, is rapidly changing all the time. So,
right.
Yeah, that's interesting. So, do you publish to print as well as digital, or because I would see that as being kind of difficult.
To publish to print, I do publish to print, and I do digital,
okay.
And I use draft to digital, of course.
Excellent, yeah. Who else could you use, really? Honestly,
absolutely.
So yeah, well, and the reason I say it's difficult, it's not difficult to actually go to print. It's difficult, I would think, if you were going to try to update and keep up with trends. You know, the print version would be the one that would go out of date fastest, I would think. But do you have a system for keeping that up?
Well, I came out with a Goodreads ebook, just an ebook, sometime late last year, and I've already updated it once, and I need to update it again. And the book that I released in December, I already need to update it for LinkedIn, because LinkedIn's platform has changed.
Yeah, yeah.
The way that it looks, at least.
Yeah, some of its functionality, too. Like, I think they no longer, I may be wrong about this, but I think they no longer hide the number of contacts you have. I don't know what their reference for it is now. It's like your friends on LinkedIn.
They
used to hide that, like, after 500. Do they still do that?
Yeah. You know, I didn't notice that.
Okay.
That's my bad. I didn't notice that.
There you go. So you owe me a credit in your book now when you update it.
I do. Absolutely. I should have known the answer to that. Oh, my God. I'm failing the interview already.
No. I don't know for sure that they've revealed that now. It's just that when I logged in, I noticed they're calling it out a lot better on, you know, when you go to your dashboard there. Like, I get to see how many followers I have or connections or whatever they're calling them. Whereas before, I had to go hunting for that information. So I didn't know if maybe they switched it and it's no longer hidden, which I never understood anyway.
I never understood that either. I know that LinkedIn is thinking of getting rid of endorsements, keeping reviews and testimonials, but getting rid of endorsements because they feel that the endorsements have little value.
Yeah, I don't think anyone ever looks at your LinkedIn profile and says, oh, he was endorsed by, unless it's maybe something big. I guess if you got an endorsement from, like, you know, I don't know, the president or something, you know, that maybe that would carry some weight or something.
Yeah. So, yeah. I don't check them when I look at other people's profiles because
me neither.
They are meaningless to me.
Yeah. Yeah. Because if you don't know, that's the trouble with social credibility, is if you don't know the person recommending someone, that recommendation doesn't carry quite as much weight. It might serve as social proof, but it doesn't really, you know, weigh in on making a decision, I would think.
Right. And when LinkedIn asks me to endorse people that I haven't worked with, then it's an indication that they're not monitoring the system well.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. That's true. Yeah, that's an interesting platform. And I'm curious what brought you to you do all social media, though. Like, you cover everything.
Right.
Right. So what got you to that? Like, why social media? I could just sense the, you know.
It's a constant struggle.
I bet.
Mean, you can imagine. What brought me to it is that I used to be a reporter.
Okay.
And then I went from reporting to working in communications, and that was for nonprofits. And the last job was working for a national nonprofit as a communications director.
Yeah.
And then when social media came on the scene, then it was the next step.
Right.
Because it became part of public relations, part of communications, and it was far more interesting than sending out press releases.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so...
Our press releases.
I just really fell in love with it. I don't think so. I know that there are people who swear by them, and that's their specialty, and I respect them for that because they've been in the industry for a long time. But I won't even do press releases for people. I did earlier in my career, but I won't now.
Yeah, I remember that used to be something I was tapped for quite a bit early on when I started copywriting freelance, and. They're not hard to do, and I still get clients. Well, no longer. I've culled down all my clients, but for the longest time, I would still get people who wanted them, and I would do them because they were basically easy money. But it's almost just like, you know, just write me a check because it's going to be the same effect. I mean, you're not going to get much use out of the press release unless you're a big name. No one even goes looking for them.
Exactly. Yeah. Unless you can get the attention of the New York Times, the LA Times, you know.
Right.
There's little point. I remember when I came out with my first book, I sent out many, many press releases.
Yeah.
And nothing really came of it.
Right. Same here. I got a few people who contacted me, you know, I don't know. They were these random contacts where they were trying to either sell me something or hire me for something. But no one was buying the book because of it, so I guess they're not that effective. But social media, I mean, the thing I think I notice most when I talk to people about social media is that they don't often know how to use it, how to leverage it. Do you have advice, you know, for that, for the everyday marketer or the indie author marketer?
You know, I do, and I developed this system, this acronym that defines what I think of as the approach to social media. And so the acronym is CARE.
Okay.
And so I encourage people to use social media to communicate, not broadcast.
Okay.
And to answer any questions that their followers have of them. And to, you know, reply and respond. And then finally, to educate and entertain, because as a former vice president of marketing for Yahoo once told me, marketing is about entertainment. But, you know, on platforms like Twitter, it's also about education because people like to dig into the blog posts that they discover or the news they discover. But it's also about entertainment because you also like to see those funny memes or those beautiful images.
Yeah.
And so balance the education with the entertainment.
Yeah.
And with indies, it's so important to consider your colleagues as some of your influencers.
Yeah.
I mean, don't just look for the big names with the big followings. Look for other people who write in your genre and enlist them to form a co-marketing team, you know, blog for each other, market each other's books. It's really important to do that because, as I often tell writers, if you write romance, for example, or thrillers, those readers are voracious readers.
Yeah.
They will read a book in a weekend, and you can't write fast enough to really whet their appetite.
Right.
And so you need to co-market books with your friends, with the other authors.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's, it's interesting in the indie publishing world, that's kind of becoming common wisdom, which is good. And people new to the industry may not realize it, but you know, us old timers who've been around for a while, we're starting to kind of notice that, you know, the more cooperative I am with the community, the more it benefits me, which I love. It's that Zig Ziglar principle.
Right. And I like to say that we don't have competitors on social media. We only have colleagues.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, for example, there's Chris Syme, and she basically does what I do.
Yeah.
And we met on social media. I've been interviewed on her podcast. She's going to be interviewed on my webinar. She's asked me to write a blog post for her blog. You know, I tweet her, she tweets my stuff.
Yeah.
We do the same work. So we're trying to reach the same authors, but I don't worry about competition on social media. I never have.
Yeah. You know, the same is true out here in the 3D world too, though. Cause we were at that conference, for example, with Pronoun and Smashwords on either side of me. And, by the end of the conference, we were all kind of having drinks together and laughing together, and you know, we say a lot of the same things. You know, when we describe our services, it's very difficult to differentiate the services. So I fell back on differentiating us as people, you know, and what team would you rather work with? And it's not a competition, it's more of a what style do you have? And I think the same thing probably applies to social media, right?
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. I really see people who do what I do as my colleagues.
Yeah.
And I look for what they do so that I can retweet it because I want to be putting out great content. And if they're creating great content, I want my readers to read it.
Yeah. Yeah. Then it becomes much more about the audience you serve rather than trying to, you know, one up the person who does the same thing you do.
Yeah, that's well said.
Yeah. That's very cool. I that's a philosophy I wholeheartedly embrace. Draft to Digital also embraces that philosophy. So that's good to hear. And so you're doing a lot of this work for writers then. Do you do it for anyone other than writers, or is it, are you just focused on authors?
I'm just focused on authors.
Huh. That's cool. What made you decide that?
You know, I think it goes back to having been a reader my entire life. And when I was 8 years old,
right. You
know, I announced that at the dinner table that I was going to write a book one day. And then being a lit major in college and belonging to writers groups because I was wanting to write a book. And then when I decided to go into social media, then it was just a natural step to do it for writers.
Yeah. That's pretty awesome. And
yeah.
Now, here's the golden question though, because being in the same industry, generally servicing authors, providing services for authors, I know that authors frequently are poor, do not have a lot of disposable income or a budget for marketing or anything until they no longer need us. But so how do you, I mean, do you find it difficult to find clients who can bring a budget to the table?
You know, I haven't so far.
Yeah.
I'm trying to think. Some of my clients are therapists who have written nonfiction books.
Yeah.
Some of them are fiction writers. I've had a picture book writer and illustrator. I've had a variety of genres.
Right.
And so some of the, they typically have different goals, but quite a number of them aren't committed to the indie life.
Right.
You know, they're wanting to be trade published, and so they're looking to increase their followers, you know, get good interactions with their followers, finish their books, publish their books, and do the marketing for their books.
Yeah.
There are others who don't have time for it.
Yeah.
You know, they just, like, I have a client, well, a guy who's going to come on as a client, he wrote a very short book, and he said, I don't want to do social media. I don't want to have anything to do with it. Will you do it for me?
Right.
And so then I have those clients. And then I have those who want me to just set it up for them and teach them how to use it.
Right. That's,
you know, are those who already have it set up because they did it themselves, but they're not getting anywhere and they want to schedule some time for training.
Yeah. So, okay. I mean, I do quite a bit on social media. I probably don't do things quite right on per channel. And there are definitely some social media channels I don't engage in as much as I should or at all. uh-huh. You know, everyone talks to me about Instagram and I like Instagram, but I always forget about it because everything I do is, I'm very centered on Facebook. Okay. And I do some uh-huh. stuff on Twitter and I will respond to and engage with people on Twitter. But default to Facebook for some reason. So what about the guy like me who's, you know, I like social media. I understand it. I understand the value of it. I don't always understand the point of some of it, but I participate. So what would you recommend for someone like me?
I think you're being smart.
Okay. Thank you. That was random, but I'll take it.
My issue is that we, you know, as authors, we need to be smart about how we use our time and we need to be smart about how we use social media. And so right. It's important to be not only effective on social media, but efficient. And so I always like to go to the Pew Research Center, which puts out a report every year showing the demographics of every social media network. Mm-hmm. And then I extrapolate that to authors and what genres they write in. And so if you are if you're a romance writer, then you need to be on Facebook and Pinterest, definitely.
Okay.
And if you write YA, then you need to be on Instagram and Tumblr and Snapchat, I would say. So this is where I disagree with some people, although I think most people have really come around to this idea and this notion that you don't need to be everywhere. You right. need to be where your readers are.
Exactly.
And so if you're doing a lot of Facebook advertising and you find that your readership on Facebook is growing and that you have good interaction on Twitter, maybe that's all you need to use.
Yeah.
I'm not a proponent of trying to spread yourself too thin because then the fatigue sets in and then you don't want to do it and then right. you're nowhere.
Exactly. Yeah. That's it. Okay. So that's good to hear because that's my approach and that's what I've told other people to focus on, you know, go where your readers are. I love that you have kind of a breakdown. I mean, that's invaluable all in itself to know, like, these are the social media channels that this type of reader frequents. That would be invaluable to have as a resource. So that's pretty cool. Is that
yeah.
something you pulled together yourself or you pulled this together from the Pew Research Center, you said?
Yeah, I got it from Pew Research. Yeah.
That's very cool. That's very cool. That makes me want to go dig in because, you know, but I think most of my readers are on Facebook. That's my gut instinct more than anything, but, you know, thriller readers tend to hang out on Facebook. And they tend to be, you know, female readers in their, like, from, like, 50 to 67 is kind of the range, it seems. Which seems odd for thrillers, uh-huh. but that's what it works out to.
Yeah, well, I know that Mark Dawson is primarily on Facebook. He
yeah.
doesn't have much of a following at all on Twitter.
Right.
And I think Nick Stevenson is the same thing.
Yeah.
I think it's different for Joanna Penn as a thriller writer. She's right. mostly on Twitter, but she's gotten more into Facebook.
Yeah, I see her on Facebook. She definitely does not spend that much time there because I see everyone. I'm connected to all of them, and I see their feeds fly, you know, through. Mm-hmm. And Mark Dawson, I see him frequently. Nick Stevenson as well. Joanna, I mostly see on Twitter. You're right. Yeah. And I wonder if that's, does that work for her? Like, is Twitter a good place for the thriller writer, paranormal thriller at that?
Well, it has been for her. Yeah. I mean, the best way to determine that is also, or verifying it, is looking at your Facebook analytics called Insight,
yeah,
and looking at Google Analytics and looking at the traffic and see what the demographics are.
Yeah.
And if you're reaching your demographics. Joanna, in particular, she fell in love with Twitter.
Right.
When she, you know, early in her career, and she got into Facebook more when I believe Mark Dawson started experimenting with Facebook ads and then started developing the course around it.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's kind of where that's my evolution too. I actually used to be very active on Twitter way back when I first got into social media, really. So I don't know really when the switch was flipped, but I'm definitely much more on Facebook now, so, which probably works accidentally to my favor. Actually, that could be responsible for why I switched to writing thrillers in the first place, because that's where my good friend Nick Thacker, that's where he does a lot of advertising and that sort of thing. That's his genre. He talked me into it, so maybe that had something to do with it.
Yeah, when you do it correctly, Facebook advertising can be very effective.
Yeah. Yeah, I've seen a lot of benefit. I've seen my list grow quite a bit from it. That's pretty much the only marketing I do, paid marketing that I do. Everything else is very, you know, I make appearances and I do little book tours and that sort of thing. But the only thing I really dump my budget into is that. So, works
that's
for me.
That's great. Yeah.
So, what are some, like, I mean, as far as, from an indie author perspective, what are some basic ground zero tips for if they're not already involved in social media or if they're not doing it effectively, what are some things they need to look at and places they need to start?
I think you need to start with who, you know, for whom are you writing?
Yeah.
So, you know, what is your target demographic? And then that will determine a lot about where you go online. You know, if you're going to spend time on Facebook, if you're going to spend time on Twitter or Snapchat or Instagram or even LinkedIn if you're writing nonfiction.
Yeah.
And so get to know your readers and look at your Google Analytics for your traffic and see if the demographics meet what you think your reader demographics already are. And the same thing for Facebook. If you have an author page, look at Insights and see what the demographics are there. Mm-hmm. And then that will really help determine where you need to be online. I always recommend starting with one social media network. So start with the one where you think most of your readers are. And I would say learn it till you rock it. And that can be about 6 months.
Okay.
And then look at where's your next place online. And maybe it's Twitter or maybe it's Instagram or maybe it's Tumblr. Mm-hmm. And then expand to another social media network. I would doubt that an author needs to be on more than three social media networks.
Oh, okay.
It's possible.
Yeah.
But I just think it's important to be efficient online because even in my case, you know, I have to learn how to use a lot of social media.
Yeah.
But that doesn't mean that I have a continued or consistent presence on every social media network. I don't. I'm primarily on those networks that really feed my career and my business.
Yeah.
And that's what I think others need to do as well, because a fatigue can set in, even for myself. And so so you just need to be smart about where you're spending your time because you still need to write your books.
Right. That's kind of the whole point.
Yeah. And it can be hard to find that time to write your books.
Right. Yeah. Go ahead.
No. Unless you're like, you know, Kevin Tomlinson and can write a book in, what, 30 days?
I'm writing right now the trick is to do everything at one time. I'm writing and I'm doing my cover at this exact moment. So.
Really?
No, I'm kidding.
Oh.
No way.
God, I was thinking.
Not even
boy,
I am
that
insane.
Boy, that is so bad for your brain. Multitasking used to see it on, you know, job advertisement. Must be a multitasker. Now they know that it impacts your brain in a negative way.
Yeah, yeah. It actually does. And I for the longest time I fought that, honestly. Because I've always considered myself a multitasker, but actually what I do is rapid tasking, which is kind of a new-ish concept, but instead, you know, rather than you're paying attention to a whole bunch of things at the exact same time, you're able to shift very quickly between different tasks. But even that doesn't do you much good. Like, you're not focusing your attention on one thing and finishing it. You're really just spreading yourself thin. So, huh. I'm unfortunately good at rapid tasking, but that doesn't mean it's a good thing. So
rapid tasking, it doesn't mean that you work on one task very quickly and then move to another?
Right. It does mean that, but you're able to shift between tasks very quickly. So a lot of times when you shift tasks, especially if they're very disparate kinds of work, it takes your brain a moment to reorient itself so that you can, you know, go from writing, say, your book description to writing fiction to designing a cover. You know, those are three very different types of tasks, and they engage different parts of the way you think. So typically, and I'm sorry, you're probably hearing this pounding noise. I'm parked close to a construction site, unfortunately. But typically, we don't do very well with that. Our brain needs at least a beat to shift gears. But you can train yourself to rapidly switch tasks. And that works great for some fields, but ultimately you just exhaust yourself. So that's a freebie. We'll throw that one. Maybe I can find an article about it and I'll put it in the show notes for everybody to read.
That's interesting.
Yeah. And I study stuff like that. For some reason, that stuff fascinates me. As far as, you know, well, I love the fact, do you work primarily with indie authors, or do you also have a catalog of traditional authors?
I work with mostly indie authors, but I have a hybrid author right now and a trade published author now.
Okay. So, okay, you brought up hybrid because that's a hot topic right now for me. And everyone I talked to at that conference was on about, you know, this, we're evolving towards a hybrid model. I firmly believe that, but you might be in a better position to judge that. What do you think?
About hybrid authoring?
Yeah, I mean, are we moving? My instinct tells me we're kind of evolving towards a fully hybrid model in the publishing world. Like, eventually that will be publishing.
You know, I wish I had a firm opinion on this, and I don't. I'm just not sure. I know that this one particular author that I work with, she used to be trade published and actually made the New York Times bestseller list. Mm-hmm. And then of late, she's gone into sort of hybrid relationships with publishers. And but now she's looking at a film deal for one of her books. So she's sort of old school and only looking for trade published books. But now she's really open to being indie published.
Yeah.
So she's kind of straddling both worlds.
Yeah. It seems like once you kind of get a taste of, there are some freedoms involved with indie publishing, but some of the biggest perks are, you know, you own all the rights to your work. So if you get a film deal, you know, you're not necessarily having to split the larger portion of that with, you know, an agent or publisher. You should probably get an agent.
Exactly.
But that's a big benefit, but also turnaround times and, you know, there are all these perks to being an indie author that I would personally not want to give up if I went into trade. And I am astonished sometimes to read articles about people who just, you know, there's no way I'll ever indie publish because, you know, insert insane reason here.
Right. Yeah. I worked with one author, and she'd been trade published, and then she wrote another book, and she couldn't find an agent for the book or a publisher for the book. And so she indie published it and had great results.
Yeah.
And so she's, I don't know, she's still 15,000, 20,000 copies of her book, and she was very happy with the results. And then she wrote another book, and now she's being trade published again. So she's a hybrid author.
Yeah. Well, and I think that there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. There's nothing wrong with going for a traditional contract. I think one of the benefits of being indie published is, one, you start to understand the industry from a different perspective. So you might more rapidly notice if there's a problem, say in a contract or something like that. But it also gives you an insight into what it's going to take to be successful, you know, and an appreciation of what these guys can do for you. And you know how to, you know, you have a platform, you know how to market yourself and position yourself. So you can actually make that trade contract benefit you more if you have that experience behind you. That's an opinion. That's not, you know, I don't have data to back that up, but that's the way it seems to me when I've talked to people.
Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. And if you've got a strong social media presence managed by Francis here, you can do even better.
Well, it's really important. And in fact, the author who just got a trade published contract, she told me that the publisher was very impressed with her Twitter account. And that's specifically what I worked with.
Nice.
On with her. Yeah.
That's very cool. Yeah.
Yeah. So
what do you, I mean, okay, I'm a bumbling buffoon, I think, when it comes to Twitter, frankly, because I set up a social jukebox with a lot of material that goes out. Every time I do a podcast, like this podcast, I have what I call my guest card, which will have your photo and a quote and, you know, a link. Well, it'll point people back to this episode, right? And then I quote that. I put that quote in Twitter and I link that image to it and I add it to my jukebox. So it goes out periodically, you know, over and over again. Twitter, I feel like I can do that because Twitter's this rapid stream thing where, you know, you could post something 1,000 times and someone may only see it once, you know. So I feel comfortable with that. But then I also pop in and I comment on things or I engage in conversations periodically, but it's mostly on remote control for me. So am I doing this completely wrong?
Well, no, because what you want to do is use a social media application, and that's what Social Jukebox is.
Yeah.
And to automate the outgoing tweets that you have and retweets that you have. But then you want to spend personal time on Twitter also. Mm-hmm. And so what I do is I curate content every day, and I look for stuff to tweet every day, so every morning. So I look what's fresh, I look what people are writing, and then I retweet it, and then I have my own tweets that I send out. Mm. And before I leave Twitter, I make sure that I go to notifications, and I look at what people are saying, what people are asking, and I reply. You know, I thank people who retweet me, and then I also answer questions and reply to people. And sometimes I start conversations with people, and then we engage for a few days in a conversation. So I know that I work with a client, and she wrote a book on domestic violence and coercive control. And we had her on Facebook and Pinterest, I mean Facebook and Twitter for a while, and then we dropped Facebook because domestic violence survivors are not on Facebook; they're on Twitter.
Yeah.
Because they can disguise their, you know, their faces with pictures of flowers or dogs or whatever they use,
right,
or lions. And so her notifications tab is so vibrant. People are, it's just, I mean, I'm just grateful to be able to witness what they write.
Yeah.
They will, in multiple tweets, tell their stories to this therapist and or ask questions. And so every day I'm having to copy their comments and send them to my client and say, how would you like to respond to this person?
Mm.
And so so she's responsive.
Yeah.
You know, she's doing the R and care. She's responding and trying to educate them too, because some people need information.
Right.
And so she can point them to studies or point them to resources. And so that's how I do it. I look for fresh content. I send it out. And then I look to my notifications tab and I try to engage with people. Sometimes I start the engagement by asking questions.
Yeah. I like that. And I okay, so I feel a little better. Because, I mean, I do that. I mean, I respond to everything. If I get tagged or someone comments me on something I posted or whatever, you know, I always love or whatever the Twitter calls it, but I always like it and I always respond to comments and questions, and I always try to say something very positive, you know, and so I think things go well. I just don't see, to me, I don't see as much engagement on Twitter as I do on Facebook. Facebook is my territory. That's my turf.
Oh, yeah.
So.
And for me, it's the opposite. I get far more engagement on Twitter than Facebook.
Yeah. So maybe it may just come down to me not spending as much time on Twitter, though. I mean, I monitor it all day, but I don't really hop in all day. So maybe I should just, you know, 4 or 5 times a day go in and just start something.
Yeah, I know that I spend too much time on Twitter. I spend about an hour a day.
Yeah, wow, yeah.
But I really love Twitter.
Yeah, see, and that's the thing, too. And like you said, you can get burned out if you're trying to do all of them. But if you've got one that you really resonate with, then you can, you know, you can put in the time and get a lot more out of it.
Oh, absolutely.
That's cool. All right. Well, look, we're kind of past our time, so I don't want to take up too much of your time. You've got an hour of Twitter to get to. but I do appreciate you being on, and I know we primarily talked about the social media stuff. There's so much more you and I could probably go on about, but I do appreciate you coming in and chatting with me about this.
Thank you so much, Kevin. I really appreciate it.
You got it. All right. Everybody listening, you can find links to all things Frances on the show notes, including a link to her website. If you're an author, reach out to her. You could probably benefit. I'm going to push you out there because you've got to have a social media presence. You can find her, and I'll have a link to her Amazon page where you can pick up books, too, so that's good. Again, Frances, thanks so much for being on the show. Everybody else,
you're welcome.
Hang out, everybody, for the wrap-up, and I will see you all next week. All right, that was Frances Caballo. And by the way, if you look up her name... So I always look up the guest to try to find a photo I can use as a headshot, just in case they didn't send one or, you know, there's not an obvious link to one. And, you know, her last name means horse in Spanish. So of course you find horse. It's a horse, of course. No, that's a whole joke I just strained. But it's kind of funny because I forgot that she told me that in the interview. So I was going to ask her, like, what's your connection to horses? So anyway, that's actually kind of cool. I need to probably look into what Tumlinson actually means. I think I've looked into it before, and it's something like, you know, I don't know, it has something to do with stonemasonry or something. You know, I have no idea. But if you know, let me know. I'm glad you were able to tune in for this. Now, we, of course... we're at the housekeeping portion of the episode, and there's a lot you can do to help support this show. Now there are a few things you can do that would help us financially. Help us, me. I'm the guy. I'm the one. But if you go onto wordslingerpodcast.com, you'll find the Patreon logo there. Its color scheme suspiciously similar to the Wordslinger color scheme. But if you'll click on that guy, it'll take you to the Patreon campaign that is woefully out of date, but is still good for slinging a buck or two my way. It helps a lot. I'm always excited when I get a new patron. It means that the show does have a positive impact, which is the whole point of the show. So that's great. And I do appreciate that. Every dime that I get goes into improving the show. In fact, right this second, I'm looking at an item purchased with money from that campaign. It's a braided USB cord. Sorry, I'm kind of out of breath for some reason. I don't know why. Let me take a deep breath. How very soothing. I have this very cool, I like braided cords, sort of the old fashioned, you know, more and more everything I buy has this braided cord, and I like the two-tone braided cords. So that's a geeky little thing you now know about me, but I have this very cool one that I bought specifically to use as I travel, because then I can, it's more durable and it's a little easier to manage. And the old cord that I had, the old USB cable that I had, had gotten smashed at one point, and the little metal housing, I pried it apart and got it working, but it never quite fits right, and I think it may actually have damaged the USB port on my MacBook. So don't do that. Just replace your cord. That's advice. All right. Anyway, but you can support the show in little ways like that. just a few bucks. I think I spent $3 on this cable. So somebody's $3 donation paid for this new cable. You can also support the show if you will review it, rank and review it, especially on iTunes. Go and find, just type Wordslinger Podcast into iTunes and you'll find me. And if you'll click through and actually leave a review, there's that breath again. I think I'm having I'm definitely having some allergies. Sorry about that. But if you'll click on that, you'll be able to leave a review. And if you'll rate the show 4 or 5 stars, that helps us to be discovered a lot easier by people who might benefit from the information. Plus, frankly, go out and share this with people. Share it on social media. Share. You know, we just learned about social media, right? Here's something you can use to test what you've just learned. Go out and share links to the Wordslinger Podcast. Maybe an episode that you really enjoyed, got something out of. Send that around to folks, and then, you know, tap your email list. Tap, you know, whatever you use to spread the word about something you enjoy. If you're liking the Wordslinger Podcast, if you know people who could benefit from it, definitely go out and spread that around. It helps a great deal. So, I'm here to, that's the whole reason I exist, is to help people. So this is one of the ways in which I do it. So if you'll help me help them, I think good karma can come your way. So, now if you have a question or you want to leave a comment, there's a few ways to do that. You can go to wordslingerpodcast.com, click the contact button and leave me an email. And I love that. If you're okay with it, I'll probably read it on the air. If not, just let me know. Just say, I'd rather this not be read on the air. You can also leave me a voicemail on the site. Click on the send voicemail tab that's floating on the right-hand side, and you can send me a voicemail, or you can call 281-809-WORD. That's 281-809-9673, and leave me a voicemail. You can do it that way. And some people have gotten industrious and they just record themselves on their phones or their laptops and send me that file. So, and you can do that. I mean, that's cool. Email me a voicemail if you want. You can email me at kevin@tumlinson.net. You can email me anything at that. It's easier usually to go through the contact form. That one has some information that you can include, like if you want to be a guest on the show, if you want to recommend a guest, if you want to book me for an appearance on something, maybe your podcast, or maybe you have an event or a book signing or something along those lines. So that's probably the best way to reach out. So do that. I love hearing from people. I got a great email, and I'm going to see if I can cue it up. One second. I'm going to virtually pause you. 1 second. Okay, check out this email I got. This is karma, okay? I like to leave reviews for books that I love, all right? I leave 5-star reviews on books that I love on Amazon because I'm out there asking people to do the same thing. So I really believe in that principle that whatever you put out in the universe will come back to you, okay? So here's a good example. This is from Sarah. Sarah says, "Hey, so funny." No, let me start that over. "Hey, so funny story. I'm a new reader of your books, and I love them." Now, that's not funny, but how I found them is a bit different. I was reading reviews on a list of books that Amazon said I might be interested in, one of which was Ender's Game. I came across your review that sparked my interest for that book, but also initiated a rabbit trail that I followed when you mentioned being a writer. So through a little internet stalking and not being able to pass up a free book, I have now finished 2 books and just bought the third in a matter of about 2 days. It's been a while since I've been pulled into a story like that, and I've missed it. Can't wait to read more, Sarah." And Sarah, if you happen to be listening, I cannot tell you how much I appreciate that review or that email and that testimonial. So yeah, I did not ask your permission, but you didn't give the last name, so we're cool. at any rate, that I love getting emails like that, and I love the fact that the nature of that one in particular really gets me. If you had any doubt that your reviews can have a big impact, this should erase that doubt. Go out immediately, and anything that you love, this show, if you love this show, any books that are written by anybody you know or don't know, go, you know, any books you've read that you love, any television shows that you've watched that you love, go and write reviews for these things everywhere you can think of. It makes such a huge difference. It makes a huge difference in the lives of the people behind these products and services. Trust me. And it can make a big difference in the lives of people reading the reviews. If you had any doubt that reviews have an impact, this should erase that doubt. So, at any rate, I really appreciate you tuning in. We're almost at the hour. You know, I hope you take care of yourselves. We're in June. I mean, we're quickly coasting through this year. Wow. I've traveled so much this year that I everything's a blur, but I am really, truly enjoying my life right now. And a lot of that is due to you guys. Everyone listening to the sound of my voice right now, you have helped me tremendously. So thank you so much for that. I cannot tell you how much I appreciate it. God bless each and every one of you. I hope you have a wonderful weekend ahead. Please tune in next time. I'm going to have even more great interviews with fantastic guests. There's a lot to learn here. So take care of yourselves out there. We'll see you next time.
Wordslinger.